Bum, bum, bum. Bum, bum, bum.
And Godzuki.
Just so Jables.
Okay.
3, 2, 1.
I'm not a performing monkey.
You look like one.
Yep.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Just So Jables birthday special.
Woohoo!
Film podcast with me, Jables.
Me, our kid.
And me, Tiny Tim.
He's still ill, in case you're wondering.
Still trying to make it all about Ben.
Yeah.
In case you're wondering, this is week three.
It's week three, but it is my birthday, so we don't care about that today, Ben.
Okay, suck it up, I guess.
This week we're going to be going to the cinema, and we're going to watch a film of my choice, which is Godzilla Minus One. And we're going to be giving you hot takes straight out of the cinema. Unusual film for us, this one, but we'll get onto the reasons why as we get to it. But yeah, you'll get our hot takes without us looking clever or comparing ourselves to other reviews. But there may not be any anywhere else because it seems to be on quite a limited release. So, as I said, we'll get onto that in a bit. Last week, we watched Wonka.
We did.
Oh yeah.
Our kid. We'd like to know how wrong or right we got it with other people's reviews. So let us know how we done.
Yeah, there seem to be mixed reviews
really?
For Wonka. Yes, The Guardian liked it. 4 out of 5 from Wendy Eyed, unashamedly sweet tooth musical, imaginative. Unashamedly sweet tooth musical, imaginative. Sorry. Unashamedly sweet tooth musical, imagining the formative years of Roald Dahl's Chocolate Showman. Chocolate
wow.
Showman.
He looks so. I've got to stop. He looks so miserable every time he made a mistake. Completely expressionless. Didn't smile or anything. Just sat there like that. And you went, I mean, you were like chuckling. She's like...
I'll keep that in then, just so yeah. Everyone knows what we're up against. Wall Street Journal, Kyle Smith, not quite so happy with it. Whimsy in need of a wilder willy. What? Timothy Chalamet. What? Don't try and be fun now, Ben.
I'm going to overcompensate now.
Timothy Chalamet proves the weakest part of a generally inspired film. Neither funny nor sinister.
We've never had a review from the Wall Street Journal before, though.
I was throwing in some
new
ones.
No, I like it. You've got to get variety.
So,
I like it.
Speaking of random sources, Good Morning America.
What?
Really? What were you on?
Yeah. Have you left your VPN on by accident?
Possibly. Hugh Grant is single-handedly worth the price of admission, though Chalamet is a pleasant surprise. So they can't quite agree on whether he was really good or really not. Kermode and Mayo, back to what we know. Kermode said he thought it was fine. Mayo was actually far more positive. He said he thought it was terrific.
Yeah.
So, yeah, quite mixed, I think. Yeah.
I've got one as well. The Omaha Echo said, I don't think these moving talkie pictures will catch on.
That's weird. Obviously, I haven't watched it again, but it's kind of stuck with me. Catherine went to see it the weekend, you know. She went with the kids and all liked it. She liked it more than the kids. They're older teenagers, so they were kind of liked it, but not that bothered. But, you know, she came out, she was like, favourite film of the year in the cinema this year. And I can understand why. I thought she would like it. And I've only really thought back in a positive way. Because I think, not that it's not valid to bullet point what you're saying, it's probably part of a larger review, but it's its own film, so... You can't tell it that it needs to be darker. I mean, I made points on it last week, but it's because he is a different character as well. And I thought Timothée Chalamet was good, actually. You know, stand up for what we said last week, really. What about you guys?
Yeah, I feel positively towards it. Like you, and I'm actually interested to see it again.
Yeah.
I think it will be fun to have a second viewing and note it, because it was a very rich film visually, wasn't it? So
yeah.
I think it will be fun to perhaps spot some of the details I might have missed first time round.
Yeah,
it'd be worth a rewatch. The only thing I think about it from thinking about it last week, I still wish the music was a bit stronger.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because I think it was a little bit, I don't want to say generic, but I think I said last week it just felt like generic Disney stuff. That sounds a bit harsh, and it probably is a bit harsh, but it wasn't catchy enough for me. I thought it was going to be a little bit catchier and hang a bit more on the music.
Well, I guess it's done well in the cinema. I haven't heard many negative comments from other people, and lots of people saying they want to see it. Yeah, well, better play. I still think in the back of my mind that it doesn't finish the story, and it, like, even of this part of his life, and they feel like there's going to be other ones which may not hang together quite so well, but we'll see.
Uh-huh.
You know, you might have said that about Paddington, and Paddington 2's a very good film, so yeah. You know, you never know, do you? But when we're talking about what we don't know, our kid, what are you on about this week?
Well, we spent the weekend binge watching Fall of the House of Usher.
Did you?
On Netflix. Have you seen that pop up?
No, I've seen it pop up. I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah,
though.
So it's made by the same production team that made House on Haunted Hill,
okay,
and The Haunting of Bly Manor. So if you like those kind of jump scary,
yeah,
things, then you will enjoy it. It stars a lot of the cast that are in those things. They're calling them like anthology series,
yeah,
now. But Carla Gugino is in it, Bruce Greenwood. Mark Hamill plays a sort of pivotal side character,
yeah,
would you say?
Yeah.
And he's really good. It's based on stories and poems and works from Edgar Allan Poe, but it's all put into this modern story about a family suddenly beset with tragedy. And you find out really early on who's died. So it's almost like a Columbo kind of,
oh, right,
how done it, why done it,
cool,
rather than a who done it. And it plays out really well. It was really gripping. And there's not a cliffhanger ending each time, but you get to the end of each episode and you're like, oh, you just,
okay,
can't wait to see, you know, who's going to buy it next week kind of thing. If I had any criticism, I'd probably say that the last episode was a little bit baggy. It was very talky and very keen to get in as much sort of Edgar Allan Poe poetry as quotes as,
yeah,
possible. So we were getting a little bit, just get to the good bits. But really positive.
Yeah.
I'd really recommend it, definitely. If you like sort of slightly spooky, jump scary, thoughtful stuff, I think you'll like it.
And did it wrap up at the end?
Yes, it did.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
Just I didn't,
yeah,
leave it a cliffhanger.
No, no cliffhanger. No need to revisit it. It's a nicely self-contained,
okay,
work. Well acted, well written. Really like it. Ben, what are you on about?
Well, something rather special, actually. So, Jables and I stayed up late on Saturday evening.
Yeah, we did.
So, Jables was around for a Chinese takeaway, early part of his birthday celebrations. And, yeah, as usual, we stayed up and watched a couple of films.
We did.
Honorary mention for The Mechanic, not the original, which we,
yeah,
have covered previously. This is the one with Jason Statham.
It's not very good.
It's not very good. In fact, it's a little bit rubbish.
Yeah.
But not so rubbish to be good.
No.
So after that, we weren't quite satisfied. And we put on The One.
Yeah.
Which is a 2001 film, Jet Li.
Yeah.
Who plays a character who jumps between... Wait, it's an early reference to the multiverse. He jumps between different universes or parallel universes or something. And he's trying to kill off other versions of himself,
yeah,
to become all powerful or something like that. Bearing in mind, this was like in the early hours of the morning, so I didn't pick up on every single plot point, and also I wasn't that well.
Yeah.
And actually, I nearly died partway through
you
the
did.
Film. Because this film is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean to be.
Unintentionally very funny, I think.
But it is. So, 2001, I think it's filmed by James Wong. It's got Jet Li as the protagonist. Call back to The Mechanic.
Yeah.
It also has Jason Statham in.
Weirdly.
Although we didn't really notice him right at the start, because
no,
he looks so weird.
Yeah.
Because he's got hair.
He's got hair and his face just doesn't look right.
Doesn't look right.
He looks basically like Bruce Willis, where,
yeah,
Bruce Willis has hair, but not. Yeah.
Also Carla Gugino, who you just mentioned,
yeah,
just in The Fall of House of Usher. Yeah, just weird. I don't know what to say about it. It's just hilarious. And some of the stuff that happens.
Yeah.
There's a particular scene where I genuinely nearly died, which I just mentioned. There's a bit where is Carla Gugino's character, isn't it? She comes in, and I can't remember what she's doing. You get a close-up of the back of her shoe.
Yeah.
And then the shoe opens, and a little mouse comes out, and then runs out and kind of blows
it's,
up.
It's got an antenna coming out of his bum, as well as the tail above it, and it starts squeaking around, and then it does blow up. And we were kind of saying, we could have sat there for like 30 days, and you had the shot of the shoe with like, and you're thinking there's something going to come out of that. We could have sat there for 30 days, and I still don't think we could have guessed.
We'd never have got to that.
What was going to come out in that? It was really odd, wasn't,
yeah,
it?
Yeah. So yeah, I think there's not much more to say about it other than you should really watch it because it is astonishing.
It is astonishingly and astonishingly bad in places.
Yeah.
But weirdly good in other places. It's post Matrix, so there's bullet time.
Yeah.
But also they tried to put loads of special effects in the fight, so it's kind of Jet Li fighting against Jet Li. But they really CGI it, and give them almost superpowers, which makes them look really unimpressive.
Yep. There's also a bit, apparently you can run very fast as well.
Chasing him,
it's like, oh my God, he's doing 50.
Yeah.
And you're looking at it, it's like, he's really not. He's just running weird.
There's a bit where I'm sure he's limping when he's running at the start. And he's like going really slow, and the cars are like, oh, we can't keep up with him. He's going 50.
I'm going to go out tomorrow and I'm going to try and find that in town on DVD, and I'm going to keep it in pristine condition, and I'm going to watch it every year, possibly twice a year.
So it's in the canon.
It's well in the canon.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's me. Jables, what are you on about this week?
Well, I wrapped it up probably last weekend. Bodies, the Netflix series. I think you've seen it, haven't you?
Yeah, we watched it when it first came out, a couple of months ago, maybe.
Yeah, so there's, how many episodes? I think it's like 8 episodes, 9 episodes it could be. Stars, was it Emeka Okafor? I'm going to butcher pronunciations. Kyle Soler, Shira Haas, and Jacob Fortune Lloyd, as well as Stephen Graham. So it's 4 detectives in 4 different time periods find themselves investigating the murder. A body is discovered with the same injuries, so appearing with the same murder, but kind of appears out of nowhere, naked, with either a gunshot wound or some kind of wound in the face. And there, you basically, it jumps between the different time periods of the different detectives all investigating it. So it's obviously each of those time periods has got its own challenges. Some of the people start to realise the connections with older files. It's all set in the same police force, isn't it? So it's based on a graphic novel, which I can see it working really well in the graphic novel. And it gets to, I'm not going to give any spoilers away, but as it goes through, there starts to be links between those time periods, and people in the future start to realise that they can affect things up. And the vice versa, people in the future realise they're being affected directly by things that are happening in the past. And people in the past, they don't work out what's happening, but they're effectively leaving messages for people in the future that they don't realise they're doing sometimes. So I think it was a really strong 6 episodes out of the 8 episodes. Because the more interesting part is the mystery and the build-up and the why things are happening. It's good and it's clever and it's nice, and everyone's really good in it. And I don't even hate like the time periods and stuff. It's actually done really well. And you can see there's clear like graphic novel influences, which is what it's based on, isn't it? Where it starts falling down for me, there's an episode that explains what's happening with one of the characters, explains how he gets that position, which isn't the problem. It's the fact that the way it's explained, half of it you already know because it's what's been worked out during the series. And then it's explained and you're like, okay. And then you get in problems after that, and then that episode and the last episode, you get serious time travel issues. And for me, it literally falls down for me. And I could be way off, but it feels like there's too many plot holes because of the wibbly-wobbly timey-wimey thing. We say about the wibbly-wobbly timey-wimey thing because, like, in some things it's just like, how does time travel? It doesn't matter, it just works. And there's certain things that you don't mind the mechanics of not working. But this is so absolutely key to the plot, the cause and effects are so central to the plot of this that it doesn't hang together. I'd still recommend someone watch it. It's really good. It's really well put together. I really liked it. But it is plot of those last two. Really, this is the last episode. I was let down with it. I was just kind of that doesn't work then.
I didn't mind the time stuff so much. What bothered me more was people behaved in ways that you thought, wow, that's interesting, but were never really useful or explained. Like, there's an episode early on where there's a foster mum and she does something really weird when she's arrested, and it's gross. Yeah. But there's no reason for her to behave that way. It's just to show that she's weird because she's caught up in this thing.
Okay.
And people, when they have like a big brother kind of society, people always talk in a very formal way.
They do.
For
yeah,
some
yeah.
reason. And it had all of those sort of things. So I enjoyed watching it, but a lot of the stuff that I was really interested in, like how sinister people were being, just didn't play out. It reminded me a little bit of that series, The Devil's Hour, that we watched a couple of years ago with Peter Capaldi in. Do you remember that one?
No.
Which had a similar-ish premise in that it was affecting different periods of time.
Right.
Not Doctor Who.
No, I figured that.
He was almost like a mad version of the Doctor. But that for me was superior.
I would watch it again. I would watch a second follow-up
series.
Yeah,
I think I would.
I think I'd as much to see the characters and bits and pieces again. Oh. Anyway, yeah. On to this week. Ben, what are we watching this week?
Godzilla Minus One.
He does know.
I'm You're shocked. Not that ill. So I've got film info.
Go for it.
But I've got very hastily put together film info.
Go
so what
for
I'm
going
to do, I'm going to read you the IMDb description.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to leave it at that probably.
Okay.
So, post-war Japan is at its lowest point when a new crisis emerges in the form of a giant monster baptized in the horrific power of the atomic bomb.
Mm,
dun,
right.
Dun, dun. Written and directed by Takashi Yamazaki. Don't know if you know of him.
No.
He is a Japanese writer-director. The Eternal Zero, Always, colon, Sunset on Third Street. Don't know if you've heard of either of those things. I have not, so I'm really excited to see his work. Starring Kamiki Ryunosuke, who, as far as I can see, has done a lot of voice work. He did voice work in Spirited Away and Arrietty, but of course it would have been in the Japanese version, and we would have listened to the American version. And then Minami Hamabe, who I was quite intrigued to see, was in a 2017 film called Let Me Eat Your Pancreas.
Nice.
Wow.
Exciting.
Is that like a literal translation of something that probably...
I think so, yes.
Maybe it's more poetic than
Japanese.
Is it a rom-com?
There's some film info. J-Ball's initial thoughts.
So I heard the chaps on my podcast that I listened to, The Weekly Planet, talking about this. I deliberately skipped the review because I was like, they started talking about it because it came out of the blue. I didn't know anything about this film happening, but it sounded actually quite cool. I was interested because Shin Godzilla came out in, when was that? Was that 2018, 2019? You've kind of got, at the minute, the Hollywood Godzilla films happening still and the Japanese films being made at the same time. They are very different in outlook still, but the quality of the Japanese ones is becoming really good, but not as flashy. It tends to be they're slightly more grounded films. So you had Shin Godzilla a few years ago. They still have the same sort of look and feel of Godzilla. Not quite a guy in a rubber suit, but it's that kind of like large monster scale sort of thing. He's almost like a bit of an anti-hero in some of the films, especially in like the 2014 one, which I do like, I stand by, I really like that. But it's him kind of like saving humanity.
And in the cartoons, obviously.
And in the cartoons, but it's not quite like that. He's still a very much a dark character in these Japanese films that are still getting made. So, set just after the atomic bomb. Like with Shin Godzilla and that, there's a lot of people talking in boardrooms. There's a lot of people discussing what they need to do about Godzilla. You know, in like laboratory, it's like powerful people and politicians and bits and pieces. Whereas this seems to be like stripping it right back to that end of the war period. So I'm really looking forward to seeing this kind of period. I'm looking forward to seeing a Japanese film. It's, you know, unusual for us watching in the cinema. It's a film we're going to be watching with subtitles.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing the scope and seeing how it's done and, you know, seeing the story and everything develop. What about you?
I think our last subtitled film was Major Grom.
Oh, God, really?
It? And that was our most listened to podcast for a long
still
time.
Is. Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it. I love the visuals in the trailer. I like the scale of how it looks. I like the tones and colours. It looks to be a very human story.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like they're larger than life characters. I think they look like they're just going to be normal people really struggling with something massive, which I think is great. I particularly like the look of the bits that seem to be out to sea with battleships and things like that. I think that looks really cool. So yeah, very excited to see what happens. Ben?
I haven't seen the trailer for this, and I'm not going to see it. I'm not going to watch it. I'm just going to go into it cold.
Okay.
Yeah, it is unusual for us, isn't it? So we're going to the Majestic as usual.
Yeah.
A Japanese language film with subtitles.
Yeah.
So you said it's had quite a limited release. Do we know why that is? Why is it on in King's Lynn?
I don't know. I think it's because, I mean, we're not actually that far away from another Godzilla film, aren't we? It's like Godzilla X Kong.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's... There seems to be a bit of separation between the Hollywood and the Japanese version. I wonder if it's because this is actually done quite well worldwide that that's why we're seeing a cinema release. Because, I mean, you know, this was out in the rest of the world, I believe, quite, you know.
End of November, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was you know, almost a month ago now. I hate to say it, but on general release, there isn't that much appetite for subtitled films.
No.
Let's face it. We all like films like that. Sounds like I'm really dumbing down. I'm not, but... People who want a popcorn film aren't going to think of watching this. But when it's Godzilla, when they see the visuals and stuff, like, this is the kind of film that could tip that balance slightly. I could be wrong, you know, but I hope it does well. It just looks cool.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I'm looking for, and I want to see it in big screen Godzilla. I want to see big screen Godzilla again.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what to expect, because I'm just thinking back to something like, there's a history of these films going back a long time, isn't there? The Japanese monster films. And I never really watched them that much. I'm kind of vaguely aware of, I have seen them when I was a kid, like old black and white ones and stuff like that. And the stuff I always like, because you know I've gone about like the Marvel stuff with the people with ridiculous powers and the CGI and stuff. And it's like, well, we know you're very clever at that, but I just don't really care. I do like that old-fashioned stuff where it's like clearly models. It's like, I know it's a model, you know it's a model, but I actually still prefer it to something that's more photorealistic. So I hope they lean into that a little bit. I'd say I haven't seen the trailer, so maybe it's quite CGI heavy. I don't know, but
I think it was quite a low budget, so I don't think it is masses of CGI.
I think they're very good at getting the best out of their budget. You know, we would normally go into like the background a bit more on Godzilla and stuff. Might make more sense coming into that after we've seen the film. I think you said it a couple of weeks ago. There's the Godzilla being an allegory for the atomic bombs going off in Japan and the end of the war. But this is interesting because it's literally set at that time period.
Yeah.
Like, dead on. So it'll be an interesting conversation topic later.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, see what themes come out in it.
Should we grab some scrum and get to the cinema then?
Let's go.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Quick question though. Is Godzuki going to make an appearance?
Yeah, absolutely.
I 100%. Hope so.
Ba, ba, ba.
And Godzuki.
And we're back, having just watched
Godzilla Minus One.
After a pizza as well.
Oh, and a pizza, and a pappardella.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, where to start? Ben, are you going to give us a synopsis of Godzilla Minus One?
Well, I'll give you a little intro / synopsis.
Can you do it in the style of the journalists in the film?
No, I can't. I'd need a lot of practice. Okay, so Godzilla Minus One. Koichi is a pilot in the final weeks of World War II, and he lands his fighter plane on an airstrip on an island, faking mechanical issues to avoid his duties. Godzilla turns up and kills everyone except him and engineer Tachibana, who holds him responsible. Later on, in the aftermath of World War II, in a destroyed Tokyo, Koichi is kind of existing, and he's helping out Noriko and a little orphan kid called Akiko. And he's got a job as a mine clearer with a ragtag team of marine characters like Jaws.
Yeah.
Just when you think everything's getting back to normal, they're starting to rebuild the city, etc., etc. Din, din, din. Godzilla turns up again, trashes a load of the city, and Koichi is finally forced to confront his responsibility. There you go.
Nice, Ben. Nice.
Very good.
Yeah, I don't think we'll talk spoilers, like final spoilers, or give away major themes, but I think we'll be able to talk about a lot of the film. Like I said, where to start? Well, I loved it to start off with. I think we saved one of the best films for the end of the year. I think for me, I already feel like it's going to feature quite well in the Jables Awards already. But in terms of a film overall, I think it was put together really well. It felt like a lot of different films, but overall it felt like a Godzilla film, but it did feel like one of the older Japanese Godzilla films, but with a very serious tone. A lot of those old ones were, but I don't know, maybe it was something in the effects or something in just the way it was done, the way it was acted and portrayed. It had a cheesiness to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
There wasn't any cheesiness to this. Even though there was some light brevity in some bits that people were talking, and some people were slight caricatures of people, and it felt almost manga-y at times, but it was still like a very serious anime type thing. And I think it was better for that, because what it meant is it didn't shy away some pretty dark themes as well. They're talking about the whole idea of kamikaze pilots and, you know, the devastation that hit Japan. They weren't shying away from it and they weren't making light of it. It was very serious, and I think it was better for that. What that done, that seriousness, kind of gave weight to when Godzilla does appear. I'd say more on the island at the start, because it does kind of start almost like a Jurassic Park. It could be that kind of thing.
Yeah.
he lands his plane on the island. It's serious then, but you're not quite feeling the weight of that seriousness at that point. And then it turns into a fight, as you say, with, you know, the engineers and a smaller Godzilla, because he's still growing, you know. And there's hints to why he gets bigger that you see later on. But it has that kind of, that has a more of a cartoony kind of aspect to it. And yeah, you can sort of feel light in it, but it's set in that tone. But then it sort of shifts quite heavily to like the aftermath of the war. And it's like, oh, actually, this is pretty dark. You know, his next door neighbour, you know, she's not nice to him.
No.
When he turns up. And he's just found out his parents have died and he's turned up at the house, which is ruined. And
yeah, it's like, how dare you come back from the war alive kind
she's
of thing.
Like
yeah.
ripping into it. And, you know, and it's like, crap. Do you know what I mean? So it's heavy in that regard. I liked that it didn't pull punches, you know. And in terms of the characters, I liked all the people in it. I liked all of them. And I think partially, do you know what? It's one of those things that partially because of that, there wasn't a baddie. There wasn't a baddie character.
Like the sneaky villain.
There wasn't the sneaky villain. There wasn't that. Godzilla was the baddie, very clearly, you know. Yeah. What about you?
I think why it worked so well is that at the heart of it, it's a human story.
Yeah.
It's not really about a monster, is it? I know they're fighting that monster, but really it's about the people in it. It's about that central relationship between Koichi and Noriko and what they try and build. And he's obviously, they're all damaged, aren't they?
Yeah.
But he's a damaged man who, you know, he says, the war isn't over for me.
Yeah.
And he can't move on and he doesn't feel like he deserves any kind of happiness.
Yeah.
And when he starts to feel any kind of happiness, Godzilla comes back. And also that little troop, we were talking about the boat and the captain and the doc and the kid.
Yeah.
They're great, aren't they?
Are great.
I love them. And I kind of want to be part of that little gang.
You could literally see that on frames of a manga.
Yeah.
In the caricatured version of all those people. But they were just kind of cool. They were just like, and I liked that.
They were. And I really liked Noriko. She was peppy and surviving.
Yeah.
I think if it was an American film, she'd have been a sassy, insufferable girl boss.
Yeah.
But she was just the right side of kind of really getting things done and being likable, but also being very human. I love the dynamic between them. You know, how they carry on that relationship with the neighbour in a very realistic way.
Yeah, it's kind of pragmatic, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
The depiction of post-World War II Tokyo, it's like post-apocalyptic, basically. There is nothing. There's just rubble.
It is rubble.
And they're just literally trying to pull things out of the rubble and exist on there at that point.
So I think jumping on what you're saying, like we talked about it very briefly before we watched it. I almost feel like there's too much to talk about and I probably don't know enough about. I'm not a Godzilla expert, but I don't know enough about like the allegories and what it says, you know, all the details, what all the films say about the, you know, Japan's relationship with atomic weapons and the atomic war and how they had to rebuild. But I think in this, it was laid out to you actually quite well. I don't feel like I need to know all that in the background because I think this put it across so well.
Yeah.
And like you said, it wasn't just his story. You realise it's his story and he's fighting that war. And then when it gets to it, everyone is.
Yeah.
The whole of the country. You think the whole of the country, but everyone that you see, it kind of like it slowly opens out, doesn't it? And there's people who are, you know, helping them, like, nearer the end. I didn't actually feel bad when there was people there who walked out. I didn't feel like they were chickens. The film didn't kind of, like, make it out like they were. People were like, if that's how you feel, I get it. But other people were standing up. To me, it was very much about the people that were leading that, the citizens, who were, like, rebuilding the country, fighting Godzilla, more than the government or the military, or they weren't being told. It was like, we have to do this ourselves.
Yeah, but there weren't military idiots getting it wrong.
No, exactly.
Which would have been really irritating.
It would have been really irritating.
Yeah, there's generic themes running across it, aren't there, that then exist at different levels through the film.
Yeah.
So Godzilla, they don't quite say it literally, but Godzilla, I guess, represents just chaos and destruction in whatever form that takes.
Yeah.
And then it's like reflecting back on Japanese society saying, you need to accept responsibility for solving this.
Yeah.
But not everyone can, or it might take them a while to do it. So the protagonist, Koichi, obviously right from the start, there's a point where he's failing to accept his responsibility, whether that responsibility is reasonable or not, you know, it could be argued. But then you know straight away later on he's going to have to accept that responsibility.
Yeah.
But he's going to go through that journey. So it's just the classic kind of hero tale, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it is. And I think it works on all of those levels. And it works on for all of the people. But particularly for Koichi, as you say, because he's the main focus that you see. Mm. He's the character that you're with from start to finish. But even the mechanic...
Tachibana.
He's so angry with him
early
on. But he realises that he can't stay like that as well.
Yeah.
And he has to change as well.
Yeah.
Because there isn't one right.
That's right. It's like their fates are intertwined in order to succeed, aren't they?
And it just works, great. Right?
Yeah. But it isn't... You aren't clobbered with that.
No.
It comes out through their interaction.
Yeah, and I think because we were saying on the way back, it's got echoes of Miyazaki films in this. There's clearly... Yeah. Whoever's made this has watched them and has probably loved them and added elements to it. And they do the same thing, don't they? They tackle quite difficult themes, but they don't bash you over the head with them.
Yeah.
Like, say, a Marvel film would, or something like that, or an American-style film. It's less literal, and it's more just not gentle. It's still quite strong, but it doesn't make you feel bad about it. It just shows you through characterisation, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you kind of get so much more out of it. Yeah. I felt quite emotional at the end.
Yeah, I did as well.
It's kind of like quite hard-hitting.
You're welling up a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit, because I start thinking about it too much, and I just really liked how it was.
Yeah. What about the visuals? What did you think?
In terms of the visuals, I really liked Godzilla. I really liked how he looked.
Mm.
I loved the design. I like how it felt like an old film, but without looking like one of the old films. But the way he moved was very... It was weird. It kind of... He had some fast-moving bits, but I actually liked the way he walked through the city.
Mm.
It's kind of weird. I don't know if it was like a really conscious design decision or maybe like partially to do with looking like the old films, but also with limitations. He's just like stood up, walking through, doesn't care what he's walking over. If I had one slight criticism, it's like you don't necessarily understand fully Godzilla's motives itself. But it's weird. I said maybe that's not even a negative thing. Because what was good about that, you didn't have someone being an expert and saying, he's trying to do this.
Mm.
The doctor guesses, he guesses at stuff, and they're guessing at things. But clearly with the way their plan works at the end, they haven't got it all right because...
That's interesting because obviously whoever made this also, there's callbacks to Jaws as well, isn't there? I mean, almost literal stuff.
Yeah.
But in that, like what you were just saying, Jables, Godzilla just kind of is.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to rationalise it.
No.
Godzilla just is and you're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah.
Whereas in Jaws, you get a bit more of the psychology of, oh, here's what the sharks are going to do, kind of
thing.
And
that's Quinn telling,
yeah.
But in this, you just kind of had to deal with it. And he's an unstoppable force. And he's like, seemingly like, there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
You either bend over or you try and fight.
Yeah. Plus the other theme, so coming back to like the, Japanese culture and coming through World War II and all that kind of stuff, there's hints at like, well, the old way of doing it, the kind of bureaucratic, here are the rules, and here are the chains of command, isn't going to work. We're actually going to have to innovate and we're going to have to collaborate. And there's all that kind of classic stuff, isn't there?
Which just, kind of works. And I think everyone has to learn that as well, because you had like the captain and the doc and they're telling the kid that he can't come and help, but the kid has to decide to do something on his own that helps them out. So yeah, but going back to what you're saying, I love the design of Godzilla. I liked how he looked like the old classic Godzilla, but he wasn't rubbery and...
But he had a big bum.
Massive big ass, didn't he? He was like that Godzilla. Yeah. But I liked how he moved. He looked kind of cute when he was swimming in the water, didn't he?
Yeah, I think Godzilla, like if you think back to the old films, they always have to look a little bit cute.
Yeah.
Because I think if you think back to it, they always did, didn't they?
But there was nothing cute about him because he didn't care.
Yeah.
It just trash anything. So yeah, the motion, quite statuesque, quite tall and statuesque. And I love the build-up for the atomic blast stuff. Just the way, I've never seen that with the, the cracking and the spine. And I was like, oh, that's cool. But when it goes off in the city, that's more than I remember ever seeing from that. That suddenly like feels so powerful and like absolutely devastating. And the roar with it, it's just, it's quality. Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, I said coming out, and we referenced Studio Ghibli films already, but I found in the visuals, even just in where you had groups of people, as much as when we were out at sea or out in the sky in one of the planes or something, there was something big about the scenery that... It really struck me as being like anime, but not cartoonish.
Yeah,
I mean, in a good way. You got a lot of detail, but also a lot of scale.
Yeah.
And I think that that worked really well. Yeah, that I really enjoyed that.
Classic distant scene where you see him flying from miles away and there's like the Godzilla in the distance with the building. It was just cool looking, wasn't it? Yeah. I like that. I would say it looks brilliant, especially like the sets and the scenery and the visuals. There is a couple of dodgy CGI bits, not terrible, but there's a couple of bits that you might go, you know, if you were feeling super analytical, but because you were so into it, it just didn't matter. And you're kind of thinking when there's a big thing running down the street and then she stops and it seems like it jumps further back again. But you just kind of like go, it doesn't matter.
I think you do that. Your brain just does that, yeah, doesn't it? When you're really immersed in it. Like we watched Amadeus a couple of months ago. And there's a bit where you see Salieri like aged up at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's obviously makeup and prosthetics. You know it, your brain's going, yeah, I know this is. But because it's so good and so well played,
yeah,
you just don't care. Yeah, it doesn't bother you. Whereas if it was a bit rubbish, you like when you see the de-aged like Princess Leia in which one was
Rogue
it?
One.
Rogue One.
Yeah.
You just kind of going, ooh, no.
I think I'm just trying to, you know, give it a balance. I can't say this is a perfect film, but it was great.
Yeah.
It totally hit the spot. I don't know what it was. Perfect film at the perfect time, whatever it was. It just absolutely hit the spot.
Do you want some numbers to play with?
Go on, give me some numbers. Right. I've got plenty more to talk about, so don't worry.
So, budget, maximum $15 million.
Really?
$15 million. Box office so far, $65 million.
It's great. And I guess that's probably a product of a lot of these, you know, the Shin Godzilla, these like older Godzilla Japanese films. I mean, there's a lot there to be said for Western Hollywood type films and then the Japanese, Korean,
Asian,
you know, Asian film industry. There is a lot of difference in costing. Mm. Let's face it, how much of the budget of like our modern films are wages and fair wages. So you don't know what's happening in the industry. But there is a clear divide somewhere when you can get something to look this good. Because we were saying it's almost like a period. It, because of the setting, it is like a period piece.
Yeah. Oh.
But it doesn't feel like a fake period piece. Problem being with that, I guess, like quantifying or qualifying or whatever, my own statement. I've never been to Japan. I don't know what old Japanese culture and things looked like in the 50s. But it looked so authentic in places that I was looking at the people, and I'm sure that some of these people are probably a lot younger than me, and they all looked old.
Yeah.
Like when
yeah.
you look at an old picture, an old film, people always look old. You're all like, wow, you all look like 10 years older than me, and you're probably like 20 years younger. But just the look and what they can do for that money, it's great. You know, I'm not going to poo-poo on Hollywood film industry because there are differences in prices and costs, but it's brilliant for what it's got.
Yeah, I mean, probably two things in my mind. Firstly, I'm just like, I'm not quite sure how they made it for that amount of money.
No.
Genuinely. But I think it also shows like stuff I bang on about quite a lot, especially when we see the Marvel stuff. It's like, sometimes a lack of money can be a positive constraint.
Yeah.
If the money is no object, you can make something baggy and horrible.
Yeah.
And so often that happens.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. So, other things, the music was awesome in it. And what I liked about it was the use of the music as well. They save the Godzilla, let's say the classic Godzilla theme. They save it. They only use it a couple of times. I don't know what it was, though. They just absolutely spot on nail the timing of it. I don't know what it was. It was just absolutely perfect and got me like completely. I was like, you know, when it happened.
It worked really well. Because it was almost like a callback, but it wasn't. It was totally of itself at the same time.
And it felt like in this film. And also the music that went along with that. There was some, you know, music with that, which was just great. But also what I'd say, there was a lot of... I'm not crying now. I just feel emotional about it. Like, excited to talk about it. There's also a lot of tension in the silence as well at times.
Yeah.
Like, not just at obvious points, but a couple of times in it. And not like silence in a film that's waiting to, like, slap you in the face.
Yeah.
It's like, literally, here, you watch this, because this is actually tense.
Yeah.
And there's a bit at the end, annoyingly, and it was, and you couldn't hear a pin drop in the cinema. And I looked over to you and you had your hand on your mouth and your eyes were wide open. It was like, oh my God. And I was feeling the same. I was like, this is awesome. And then you heard in front someone someone decided to open an individual boiled sweet or something at that exact moment. And we both, you were like, oh God. I was like, perfect.
Yeah, at that moment, I was like, civilization is doomed.
I know.
This is a microcosm of everything that's wrong with society.
Luckily, it didn't spoil it because it got time to look back up at it. But in that very moment, it was just like, what are you doing, man?
Here's an interesting question, though, on that point, going slightly off tangent here. I wonder what proportion of people go in to watch this film and it's absolutely not what they thought it was going to be. That's and they're pissed off about it. Because they might come in thinking, oh, this is going to be like smash things, Godzilla, cannons, bang, action. And then it's like actually quite deep and thoughtful and a bit slow in places and a bit quiet in places. And they're like, oh, this is rubbish. Do you think there are people thinking that?
I don't know, because I think, it's fair to say, it wasn't that busy in the cinema tonight. And there were a couple of people kind of playing up at the start, a bit noisy, who got shut down by someone.
By the person with the boiled sweet.
But we won't say anything about that. Because fair play to them. And to be fair, I think those people further down were kind of like expecting the Godzilla crashy smashy bits and pieces. But as the film went on, I think they got sucked. They must have been sucked into it. If you didn't like it after half an hour, you're not going to stay all the way to the end. And they were pretty much dead silent from like halfway through. So they obviously got sucked into it. So I think that's a fair point, Ben. But yeah, so I loved the sound design. I loved all bits and pieces like that. There's a possibility that Hollywood might actually take a look at it and go, wow, maybe this is the film that we should have done. I think maybe it might make people potentially reevaluate that 2014 film, which got mixed reviews, even though, you know, done well in the cinema. But it might make them think, oh, actually, you can do that in a film. You got anything else to add, Ben?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I suppose talking about like American style filmmaking, Hollywood style stuff, I think everyone who makes epic disaster films or action films or anything like that, or monster films or superhero films, this should be like on the syllabus for anyone coming up through the ranks. Watch this.
Yeah.
Because it's like a lesson in how to make films.
Yeah.
Like in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not saying everyone has to make the same style of film.
No.
It doesn't always have to be thoughtful and it can be crashy and ridiculous. Yeah. But people should realise that there is a different way of doing things.
Yeah, understand. That's fair. Have an understanding of all of it. I could literally go back and watch it now. And it feels like the kind of film that I hope I won't spoil by watching too much. But I just think that I could watch it and pick something up each time. And I feel like I could talk as long next on the next podcast. I probably will want to talk about some things that I haven't mentioned now. Because, I don't know, there's bound to be bits that I've missed.
Yeah, there's things to digest,
aren't there?
There is. Really think about.
I literally just picked my phone up to see, is it on for the rest of the week?
Yeah.
Because we might have to go back and see it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally. So, no, loved it. I won't just like say, oh, it's the best film I've seen this year, because there's probably other ones that I've liked. But it's nice to have, nice to be able to watch two good films in a row that I've liked for almost completely different reasons. But I've gone into this with high expectations and slightly nervous of that, and you know, even they've been like knocked out. Just great. Just like really, really good. And I'm interested to see what the rest of the world thinks, because I'm worried that, I don't know, maybe it's my birthday and I'm slightly euphoric. Yeah. You guys liked it as well.
Yeah.
Maybe it just like totally hit the nail on the head for us. And do you know what? I don't care, because I felt like I've been in this point before. I remember talking about Scott Pilgrim and everyone's like, oh, that was pretty crap. And then people are coming back going, oh, that was great.
Mm.
I remember talking about Watchmen and walking out of that film and going, I absolutely loved it.
One of the best films I've ever seen. Yeah. And other people going, well, we're the same.
Everyone else around me going, what the f*** was that?
I know.
So, and do you know what? If that happens, I don't care, because I loved it.
Yeah, there you go. Definitely. I can't really give it a grade.
No, I'm not going to.
Just I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go out on a limb and say it is the best film I've seen this year in the cinema.
Mm. No car scale, though. Or car
no
too
cars.
Good for that.
I was thinking through cars, and I'm like, well, every car is, it has issues, so I'm just not going to, I'm not going to do it.
Fair dues. So, trailers. First one was Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
Aquaman 2, sorry, which we've talked about quite a bit of times. I'll be honest, I watched it again this time. For some reason, I didn't think it looked as bad as I thought it did before.
No, the bit that I kind of warmed to a little bit was the interaction between Aquaman and Patrick Wilson's character.
Yeah.
I thought if there's a little bit of redemption somehow there,
yeah,
it might be nice.
It didn't seem as, it just, the CGI didn't seem quite as egregious to me for some reason. I was just like, maybe it's because I was waiting for the film to come on. I wasn't thinking too hard about it. But yeah, so yeah, we talked about that. But and the second one was
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
I don't know why you've got a problem
with
that.
Don't you think it's weird to have it's of not. The? Do you not think double of
I think,
the?
I think
weird.
It's fine. Maybe a little bit lazy.
They've had that in all the planets. Like, look, you had Journey to the Planet of the Apes and then.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Journey escape, to the escape planet, to the planet of the.
I think it's fine.
Kingdom of the. They had escape, yeah.
Okay, it's just me. But I think it's lazy and dumb to have of the. Yeah. I've written it down, and of the, in the same line of text. Just looks
why don't you have Planet of the Apes, Apes?
Because that would be stupid.
I have seen the trailer before, but I actually quite liked watching it in big screen. I'm a late convert to the Apes films. I only watched them like the end of last year with Catherine. We watched the last of the Apes films. And yeah, I got into them. It's not a direct sequel to that. I think it's like 30, 40 years later. So I'm kind of like be interested to see like Caesar's story completed. I didn't want to see any more of that. So I'm actually quite glad there's like a jump to this film by the look of it. So what do you think coming out?
Not a big fan of the Planet of the Apes films, to be honest. I don't find them all that interesting. I keep meaning to watch the ones that you were just talking about.
Yeah, I think they cover some good themes and actually good storytelling, actually, I'd say. And
I didn't mind the really old ones. When we were kids, they were kind of part of the landscape
Stop
of
their
films,
time,
weren't
they? Yeah.
The Tim Burton one, the least said the better, I think. Yeah. It wasn't good. I mean, the movement and stuff like that, the visuals were okay, but it wasn't a well put together
there's
film.
There's a lake. It's an Abraham Lincoln. What are we going to do? Abraham Lincoln, yeah. But, I'd give him a go. If you don't like the first one, there's quite a big time jump between the first of those ones and the second one. In some ways, the second one's like The Empire Strikes Back kind of thing.
Right,
it's like a good jump and quite a different film. So you'd watch the first one and go, God, I don't want to watch another two films of that. And I think that's partially how it was for me. I enjoyed it, and it's not that it's bad, it's just kind of like, I've seen enough of that. It's almost like the Daryl. If you imagine like there was a sequel to Daryl, but there was lots more Daryls and they were kind of going to war and they were fighting against humans and stuff like that. That's what the second Apes film
was
see that. Compared to Daryl. And no one's ever made that comparison to data analysing robot youth life form Daryl to the Planet of the Apes films. Yeah. But, you know, that's gold, that is.
Yeah, you heard it here first.
Give it a go. Anyway, I've said enough.
Yeah, I didn't mind the look of that trailer. I think it'll be fine. Yeah.
Hey, I think you'd like them. Give them a go.
Okay.
Cool.
Well, next week then.
So next week is our Christmas special.
Our Christmas special,
So tune in to hear about what we're watching over Christmas.
Yeah. But also, don't forget, after Christmas, when you're feeling all sad and not Christmassy anymore, The Thing on the 6th of January, Saturday the 6th at 7:30, the King's Lynn Corn Exchange.
Yeah. Or you got a message tonight when we sat in the cinema, didn't you?
We did get a message tonight from Georgina.
Yeah.
Saying tickets booked, see you there.
Lovely job. It's going to fill out quicker, I reckon.
It's filling up, yeah.
Yeah.
Great
stuff. Happy Christmas, everyone. And if you want to get in touch with the show, how do you do that, our kid?
You get us on the socials, at Just So Jables.
Say get in touch with the show. Such a goon. Carry on.
Because it is the 80s.
I know.
And we're talk radio. Quick press record. Play together.
Go on.
You can get us on the socials at Just So Jables on Facebook, Instagram and X. You can email us hello@justsojables.com or just find the links on the website justsojables.com. Give us a like on Spotify.
Join our following on Spotify. And leave us a review and leave us a like. And if you like this review and want to ping it up on your own socials, then do it.
Right then.
Do it.
Thanks, everyone. Happy Christmas.
See you next week.
Cheers.
Happy birthday, Jables.
Thanks. Finally, jeez.
Just So Jables.
Gorilla. That's my Bob Fossil.